And we're holding in Gittin, page Yud, Ois Choftes. Still in the middle of talking about the Agadis of the Churban. We learned last time about the massacre in Beitar, and before that, we learned about the Churban of Yerushalayim itself and of Tur Malka. So the Gemara continues on this topic. The pasuk says, "Akpil kpil Yaakov vayadayim yidei Esav." The voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav. Whereas one meaning of it, we know it means that when we use our voice in Torah, then the hands of Esav have no power over us. And in general, that's true. Although we learned earlier in the sugya, that's not always true. In any case, Marsha says the vort is that the Gemara is going to explain that now as referring to the massacres of Jews by Esav, by the Romans that we're talking about in these various times. And the point is, when Yaakov is going to receive the brachas, he's nervous about that his father might recognize him because of his voice. So the same way, later in Jewish history, in fact, that worry came true as Yaakov was worried about what's going to happen, the same way later on the Jewish people had what to be worried about, and in fact, of negative things that happened, as the Gemara is going to say now. So HaKoil, when it says the voice, Ze Adrianus Caesar. This refers to Adrianus Caesar. In English, he's called Hadrian. Shahorag by Alexandria, Shamitzrayim, Shishim Ribi, Al Shishim Ribi. He killed in Alexandria in Egypt, which at that time had a huge Jewish community, and he killed there 600,000 plus another 600,000 Kiflaim Kiyotz Mitzrayim, so altogether twice as many Jews who left Mitzrayim, so 1.2 million. We find in various places, the community, the Kehillah in Alexandria, the Gemara mentions, for example, they had an enormous shul, which the Gemara says if you never saw that shul, you never really saw the glory of the Jewish people. So they had that, the Gemara, there's a place where the Gemara quotes a letter from the Chachamim in Yerushalayim to the community of Alexandria, and they call her Achosi, my sister, because it's like almost as important to Kehillah as Yerushalayim itself. So now Adrianus wipes them all out. Tosfos actually points out there's a Gemara in Sukkah that says that Alexandrus killed them, which on the face of it means Alexander the Great. So Tosfos says that evidently he killed them in his time. Then later on, Jews resettled the place, and now Adrianus killed them again. There was quite a bit of discussion about that because Alexander is the one who founded the city of Alexandria, and according to the historical sources that we have, he seems to have been fairly friendly to the Jewish people. What would he be doing killing them? So there are those who say that in that Gemara also, maybe it's not supposed to say Alexandrus, maybe it's supposed to say Tarchinus, which means Trajan, or the Roman emperor who was right before Hadrian. In his times, in fact, there were terrible pogroms against the Jews of Alexandria, so it could mean that. It could mean a general named Alexander. But the Maharal says actually what the Gemara may mean by it is that Alexander began the process and then later on, so he didn't actually kill Jews in his times, but he did things in his times which eventually, hundreds of years later, brought about that now that that Adrianus has the goyim over there are anti-Semitic enough to go and massacre the Jews over there. So the Maharal doesn't specify exactly how. One possibility is when Alexander first built the city, he designated divided it basically into five large areas we find in historical sources, and he designated two of those are meant to be the Jewish neighborhoods. So Bepashtus, he meant it as an honorable thing, like just Jews have a community and whatever of their own, but maybe it was, in a certain sense, it was like the beginning of the creation of a ghetto or something, which later on was saying in Adrianus' times, then that brought about this pogrom and this huge massacre. Anyway, so that's HaKoil. Koil Yaakov, when it continues the voice of Yaakov, and then the scream, all of this, the screams and cries of Jews who are being killed. The Aspasianus Caesar, this refers to Aspasianus, the emperor, or the one at the time of the Churban that we said before. Shahorak Bekrach Beitar, Arba Meis Riboy. He killed in the great fortified city of Beitar, 400 times 10,000, which would be 4 million. Va'amila abas alofim riboy. Some say 4,000 times 10,000, which would be 40 million. So now, here you also have the question, because as Asfasionis, we said, was at the time of the Churban, and here we're saying the destruction of Beitar was several decades later, and Asfasionis is long dead by then. So again, the Maharal, so again, there are all different Gersois over here. Maybe it's not supposed to say Asfasionis, maybe it is supposed to say Adrianus, in whose times Beitar was destroyed, but again, the Maharal says that maybe what the Gemara means to say over here is that it's all a continuum. From the Churban, eventually there came out from that, the destruction of Tur Malka and the destruction of Beitar. It's all one continuous thing, and therefore we can all attribute it to Asfasionis in the sense that the beginning of that process began in his time and then ended several decades later with the destruction of Beitar. He also talks about the numbers that we're saying over here, this 4 million or 40 million. He said maybe it's not necessarily meant literally. 4 represents all passes, is the 4 directions, the 4 cardinal directions, so therefore it's an appropriate number to refer to a big fortified city. And then you multiply it by various powers of 10 to signify how great and important it was. Anyway, so all of that is a kol kol Yaakov. Vayadayim yidei Esav, and when the pasuk continues, the hands are the hands of Esav, zu malchus Edom. This refers to the kingdom, to the empire of Edom, the Roman Empire, shechriva es beisenu, which burnt our house, our beis hamikdash, v'sorfa, which destroyed our house, v'sorfa es hechelenu, and burnt our hechel, v'higlisonu me'artzenu, and took us into golos from our land. So their pasuk, akol kol Yaakov, is hinting at all of that happening in the future. One thing is also besides that we said, the Marsha says that the vote is that Yaakov at the time was worried about what's going to happen, and sure enough, this worry came true long after. Another point, Ion Yaakov also makes the point that, like this, we have Yitzchak told Esav afterwards, "V'hoya kasha torid." When you have reason to complain that Yaakov's not doing what he's doing, then you'll have the power to dominate him. And here we see that this is actually what happened. The Ben Yehoyada, by the way, points out, I mean, we also talked about enormous numbers of killings of Jews that Nebuzaradan did, we learned about last time. Why is the Gemara not mentioning that? Because the Gemara is focusing on the ones that were done by the Romans. The Romans are descended from Esav, as we talked about a couple of days ago, what that means exactly, whereas Nebuzaradan is not. He's from Babel, which is a completely different nation. The Gemara continues, Dover Acha, another explanation, Akil Kil Yaakov, means, Ein Lecha Tefila Shemai Elas She'ein Bamizare Shel Yaakov. You never find a tefila that's effective that doesn't have something of the descendants of Yaakov in it. So a Yid is somehow involved, and therefore that's what makes Hashem accept the tefila. Vayadayim Yidei Esav, and the hands are the hands of Esav, means Ein Lecha Milchama Shenetzachas. You never find a winning battle She'ein Bamizare Shel Esav, where you don't somehow have the descendants of Esav mixed in it. So in other words, again, the point is, in other words, that Yaakov's main koyach is in his voice, his tefillah, and Esav's main koyach is in their hands and in their sword. We find, for example, that when Moshe sends a message to Melech Edom to ask him to pass through their land, in Parshas Chukas, he mentions to him that we use our power of tefillah, that we daven to Hashem, Vanitzak El Hashem, and Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And the king of Edom responds back, you know what, you're so proud of your talent with the mouth, while our talent is with the sword. Pen Bacherev Etzelek Rasecha, I'm going to confront you with the sword if you try to pass through my land. So each of them has their specialty, basically. So the Maram Shif points out, I mean, you know, what about you going to say, for example, let's say David won his wars and other Malchi Yisrael won their wars, where is Esav involved over there? He says, we're not talking about wars that are fought L'Shem Shemayim, we're talking about some wars in general history, those you always have somehow Esav is involved on the winning side. So the Gemara continues, V'hainu de'omer Rabbi Elazar. Now this bears out what Rabbi Elazar said. What's the this? We'll talk about it in a second. The pasuk says, B'shoit Loshon, when the tongue is like a shoit, it's causing danger, techove, then you should hide. So he explains, it means v'chore loshen, when the tongue is causing arguments and fights, techove, then you better hide, because it means trouble is coming. What do we mean by that? Rashi says this V'hainu D'Amar Rabbi Elazar is referring all the way back to the beginning when we talked about how Yerushalayim was destroyed because of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, because of the Lashon Hara, that Bar Kamsa went and told the emperor. So now Rabbi Elazar is saying that this bears out this point, that the Pasuk is telling you when there's Chilchure Lashon, when there's arguments being caused by the tongue, as in Lashon Hara, then you better hide. Marshall says it's a little bit of a doichach. You're going to say that now after a block and a half, the Gemara is first getting back to bringing that proof. It should have brought it much earlier before we got to Tur Malka. Rather, Marshall says that we're talking about that this goes with the last piece that we just said about Akil Kil Yaakov Ayadayim Yidei Esau. When Bnei Yaakov are using their tongues and their mouths for tefillah, then things are very good. But when they start using it to be argumentative and to cause fights, then you better hide from Esau. Namely, for example, the same way Marashah says, we find that Jewish people complained in Rephidim, we don't have water, and the result was, by Yavai HaMolech, the same way, then we're saying now that as long as HaKel Kel Yaakov with Torah, then we're good. But when it's B'chuchurei Loshen, then Esau's going to be on the plow, and then you better hide out. The Maharal says another vort on it. He says that the Gemara is actually so similar to Rashi, but not just we're referring to the story of the Churban with Kamsa by Kamsa. We're referring to everything that we said so far. Again, at this point, the Gemara has basically finished with the story of these three places, Yerushalayim, Tur Malka, and Beitar. The Gemara is going to go back and talk more about Beitar later on, but basically we're finished with that, and now the Gemara is going to bring a number of miscellaneous stories and statements about the Churban. So now the Maharal says this vort over here about Churban Losh is referring to all these three things. It's all a continuum. Yerushalayim was destroyed, and as a result of that, sometime later, Tur Malka and Beitar were destroyed, and therefore the Gemara is saying, and it was all brought about, all these three major tragedies were all brought about originally by the Lashon Hara of Bar Kamsa. The Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, my dichtir, what does it mean? The Pasuk says, Al Naris Bavel, by the rivers of Bavel, Shom Yashavnu, there we sat, Gam Bochinu, and we cried, Bezachreinu as Tzion, when we remembered Tzion. Now the question is, Marsha explains, the point is like this, we have a number of kapitlach tilim that refer to the Churban, but most of them have an author's name attached to it. Mizmor La'osaf, for example. Or Lam Natseach Mizmor L'Bnei Korach, or whatever. So then we can say, fine, B'nei Korach or Osaf witnessed the Churban, and they actually wrote about it. Or it can mean that they wrote Beruach HaKodesh about it. But here, Al-Naris Babel doesn't have an author's name attached to it. We know that any kapitel tilim that it doesn't say who wrote it means that David wrote it. Now, how is David writing about Al-Naris Babel when in his times the Beis Mikdash wasn't even built yet? So Melamed, Shehero, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, LeDavid, Churban Bayis Rishon, VeChurban Bayis Sheni. So we see that Hashem showed David with Ruach HaKodesh the Churban of both Bate Mikdash, the first and the second, and both of them are referred to in this capital. So therefore the capital was written in the voice of a person who actually went into Golos, Shom Yashavnu, Gam Bochinu, VeZachreinu Asiyan, etc. But it's all David writing it hundreds of years in advance with Ruach HaKodesh foreseeing what's going to happen. So by the rivers of Babel, that's referring after the first Beis Mikdash. Because further on in it you have Zechor Hashem Livnei Edom, remember Hashem against the children of Edom. Eis Yom Yerushalayim, the day of Yerushalayim, meaning the day when it was destroyed. Ha'omrim, where they were saying Oru Oru, destroy it, destroy it. Ad Hayisoid Ba, all the way down to the foundation of it. So in other words, Marshall says it means that the Churban Bayis Sheni was basically the final stage of the Churban Bayis Rishon. You had the Churban Bayis Rishon, and then they came and rebuilt the second Beis Mikdash. But they were still subjugated to the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans. So therefore, so it's all essentially one long Churban with a couple of hundred years break between them, and therefore the Romans, Edom, are saying Oru Oru, destroy it completely, meaning that the complete destruction was the second Beis Mikdash. And in fact, we find elsewhere it mentions that after the Basileum destroyed the first Beis Mikdash, but basically They destroyed the ceilings, parts of the walls. There were still the floors and parts of the walls were still there when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash. As opposed to the second Beis Hamikdash, when it was destroyed a few years afterwards, the Romans plowed up the area completely, which is one of the things that we commemorate on Tisha B'Av, Necho Sha'ir, which is why now it becomes so hard to know where exactly anything in the Beis Hamikdash was located, because all the landmarks were destroyed. So that's what we mean, that they were saying, Oru, Oru, destroy it, Adi Yisoid Ba, all the way to that, down to the foundation. So we're saying that David saw all that with Ruach HaKodesh. With that said, though, there is a very interesting idea that the Das Sofrim on Tilim says about it. He says, all true, this was Ruach HaKodesh, but after all, he says, you have to ask. So when David composed this capital, How did people understand it during the next 400 or 500 years? And how comes it, for example, that let's say, you know, you find Yirmiyah is telling people Nevuah, do tshuva, where the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed, and you're going to go into Golos and Babel. How do people not say, you know, that's true, we actually have this capital to them that we've been saying for the last 400 or 500 years? So he says a very interesting idea, that in David's times, you may have had, David fought a lot of wars against various Goyish nations. At some point, there may have been Jewish soldiers who were taken captive to Babel, and they're crying over there about their homeland in Eretz Yisrael and about Sia, and not about the destruction of the Beis Mikdash per se, but just that they personally are in Golos. So therefore, so David could have written that capital having such people in mind, but in addition, also having in mind what was saying the national, that wouldn't have just been, if it's about some private people, it wouldn't make it into Sefer Tehillim, but it's also meant about the national tragedy that was going to happen later. But nevertheless, in earlier times, people might have thought of it as just something that applied to a few particular soldiers in David's army at the time. The Gemara tells, the Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the Tamer of Ami, the Amilav Masnis Atonah. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, others say Rabbi Ami said it, others say it says in a Braisa, the following story. Maisa the Dalad Meis Yelodim V'Yelodis, and happened with 400 boys and girls, Shanishbu L'Kolain. They were taken captive by the Romans for Kolain. Kolain literally means embarrassment or shame or degradation. It means, and Rashi says, the boys were going to be used for Mishkav Zohar, and the girls were going to be used for Pelagshim, for concubines, for the Roman soldiers. Hirgishu Ba'atzman L'mahe Mesvachim. They realized what they're being sought for. They realized that Marsha points out. They realized that they had left only them, the young men and women, alive, and not anybody older. So they realized they're being taken for this kind of immoral purposes. Omru, they said among themselves, Imon, they asked among themselves, Imon of Tovim Bayam, if we drown, if we jump off the boat and drown ourselves in the sea, Onu Boyim L'chaya Olam Haba, will we come to the life of Olam Haba? Meaning, Mefoshim explained, there are two questions that they're asking. First of all, they're asking like this. We know, we learned at the end of Ksubas, that there's going to be Gilgul Mechilas, that when Mashiach comes, and the Tchias HaNesim, we have the Tzaddikim who are buried outside Eretz Yisrael, are going to roll through tunnels to come to Eretz Yisrael, and then they're going to have Tchias HaNesim. So part of their question is that going to be the case also for people who were drowned in the sea? And a second part of their question is, if we commit suicide like this, are we going to come to Chaya Olam Haba, or does a person, the Derech Klal, we say that a person who commits suicide, Rahman al-Islam, loses their place in Olam Haba? In fact, they say that the Gemara never really says that in so many words, but we see that that may be the implication of our Gemara. So they're asking, in other words, would it be an Avera for us to do it under the circumstances rather than we should be used for such Averas? So the Gemara says, Dorash lahem agadol shebehem. The greatest one, the eldest among them, gave the following drosha and explained to them. He quoted them a pasuk. Omer Hashem mi Boshan Oshiv. Hashem said, I will bring back from Boshan Oshiv mi Bitsulois Yom. I will bring back from the depths of the sea. So this boy, Darshan, mi Boshan Oshiv means mi ben shine aroyis, from between the teeth of the lions. And I will bring back from the depths of the sea, meaning people who drown in the sea. So either way, whether they were killed by lions or whether they drowned in the sea, either way, yes, they are going to have Chaya Olam Haba. They will be able to have Gilgul Mechilas, and they will have Tchias HaMesim, and they will have Olam Haba. By the way, you know, you find the reason why Shene Aroyas comes in over here, actually, you find Josephus mentions in his histories that after the Romans conquered and destroyed the Beis Mikdash and took hundreds of thousands of Jews captive, he describes over there how Titus is going from one city to another with his army, and they're putting on shows in their arenas to entertain the various Goyim, and among them, as we know, in their arenas they often had people fighting against lions. So you should have. There were Jews over there who were being taken and then put defenseless over there in the arena to fight against lions or other wild animals. So there really was at that time, there were many Jews who were torn to bits by those lions. And now you have these boys and girls on these boats are going to have to jump into the sea. So therefore, so again, this boy Darshan to them that both groups will in fact they're being killed are Kiddush Hashem, and yes, they will have a Chelek L'Olam Haba, and they will have Gilgul Mechilas. So Kivin Shashomer, you love this calf. When the girls heard this, Kofsu Kulam and Nosul Vasechayam, all of them jumped into the sea and drowned. Nosu Yolodim Kavachomer Ba'atzmam, the boys then made a Kavachomer to themselves. Va'omru, they said, Maha Lolu Shadarkan Makach. Now consider these girls, after all, what they were going to be used for is something, in a sense, in more of a way, is more natural for them. They're women. They're going to be had relations with. Under normal circumstances, it would be with their husbands. Like this, it would have been with these goyim. But still, after all, it's something that's something more normal for women. Kach, and yet so, they jumped into the sea. Onu she'en darkeinu l'kach. We boys, where it's completely unnatural for us to be used for mishkav zocher, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that we should do so. Ask him, in fact, a couple of Mephoshim point out the reason why the girls jumped in first. We often find that girls and women have a greater sense of connection to the Eidishter than boys do. So therefore, like, they almost instinctively did it, and the boys had to think over whether it's the right thing to do. The boys also then jumped into the sea. On them, the pasuk says, "Ki alecho hiragnu kol hayom, because of you, Hashem, were killed all day long. Nechshavnu katzayin tivcha, were considered like sheep for the slaughter." So here you have all these children, all these young men and women who jumped into the sea rather than being used for such avodas. Tosfos and many other Rishonim discuss actually what the propriety of it is al pi halacha. In general, a person taka is not allowed to commit suicide. So Tosfos says, and then Tosfos discusses the same point in other places as well. First of all, they may have been afraid that they're going to be subjected to yisurim. They're going to be whipped or tortured or whatever. We find even that it says about Hanani, Mishael, Vazalia, that if Nebuchadnezzar had threatened to torture them rather than actually throwing them into the fire, they would have given him and bowed down to a statue. So the same way over here, they would torture them. And that kind of thing might be a valid reason for a person under such circumstances to do that, to take their own life. What?
To preempt
them from being tortured and forced to do avarice. Other Mephoshim talk about a variety of other possibilities. It means, for example, that they were concerned that it might now you have Bechlal, when it comes to Gili Arayis, the question is it only the one who's the active person in it is the one who has to be most nefesh not to do it, or what about the passive one? For example, when it's a woman who's being forced into Arayis, generally speaking, we say the Gemara says Esther Kauka Olam Avori, for example, that she was passive relative to Achashverosh, and therefore she's not required to be most nefesh for it. So does that apply across the board? And is there the possibility that maybe they're going to be forced into doing something active? That might be another reason. So there's an enormous amount of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about all of this, about when a person is or isn't allowed to do such a thing. We find in later Jewish history, there were a number of times during the Crusades, for example, when people killed themselves and their children rather than be forced to be baptized and take on the Crusaders' religion. We have a number of kinnis that we say on Tisha B'Av where we mention that. We have, by the way, one of the kinnis of Tisha B'Av mentions this story as well at the end of it. Marsha points out over here that you have, besides for this one pasuk that the Gemara is quoting, Ki Alecha Hiragnu Kol Hayom, we have several other pasukim that we see from that capital that capital Mem Dalet is talking about how we suffer so much in Golos and Hashem, please rescue us. So we have several other psukim in that capital that refer to this point that we're ready to be killed, Al Kiddush Hashem. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Rabbi Yehuda says that pasuk Ki Alecha Hiragnu Kol Hayom is actually referring to a different story. This is the story of a woman and her seven children. Now, we know the story famously is the story of Hannah and her seven children. Here, the Gemara doesn't name her. In the Medrash tells the story as well. By the way, one thing is, the Medrash tells the story about the 400 boys and girls and tells it with a few variations, but also in the Kina, when we tell about it in Tisha B'Av on one of the Kinas, we have a detail over there where it says that they sang to Hashem as they're jumping off the boats, like the way they sang by the Yamsuf. In other words, not just that they're going Al Kiddush Hashem regretfully, they're happy to go Al Kiddush Hashem and making the bracha for it, and then they know that it's a great schus You have examples. You have several examples during the Holocaust. Also, for example, where there were people who went into the gas chambers or went to the killing fields or whatever, singing songs, singing Ashreinu Matov Chokenu or Baruch Hu Elokeinu Shebaranu L'Chavodo or other such things like that to express how fortunate we are that we're Hashem's people, even under such circumstances. What? Ani Mamin as well. Yeah, famously Ani Mamin. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "But of Yehuda Amar Zu Isha V'Shiva Banea." So the pasuk Ki Alacha Ragna Kol Hayom is referring to the story of the woman and her seven sons. Now, here in the Gemara, it doesn't name her. The Medrash in Eicha Rabba tells the story with a few variations and names her, gives her the name Miriam Bas Nachtein. The fact that we all know it as Chana and her seven sons, that actually comes from the version in Yusifun. There's also an interesting point when this happened. Here the Gemara is going to mention that it happened in front of a kesar, which suggests that it happened sometime after the Churban. On the other hand, Yosifun tells it as happening in the times of Antiochus, in the years before the Nes Chanukah. So Mephoshim discusses, is it the same story, or is it maybe the same kind of thing happened in two different historical eras? Anyway, so they brought Asiula Kamaka made a kaser. They brought the eldest son in front of the kaser, Omrule, and they told him, Plach Avodah Zarah, worship the Avodah Zarah. Omrulehu, he says, no. Kosev Batorda, Noichi Hashem Alekacha, the Torah says, I am Hashem, your God, and therefore I'm not having any of your Avodah Zarah. Apkur Vakatlua, they took him out and executed him. Asiula Idach, they brought the next son, Lakame de Kaser, in front of the emperor. Omrulei plach l'avodah zarah. They also tell him worship avodah zarah. Omrulehu, he answers them kosev atorah lo yidah l'chay l'kim acherim apona. You should have no other gods in my presence. Apkur v'katrua, they took him out also and executed him. Tosfos actually has a girsa that the first one had said both anoichi and lo yidah l'chay, and all the other ones are shifted one down. Tosfos has a girsa that only the first six boys quoted a pasuk and the seventh one did not. But the girsa we have in front of us is that each of them quoted a separate pasuk, and we'll talk about after we go through the seven of them why each one said a different pasuk. Why didn't they all they could all say the same thing? So we'll get to that. They brought the third son. They told him worship Avodah Zarah. He tells them, don't worship another god. They took him out and executed him. They brought the fourth one. He says to them, anybody who sacrifices to other gods will be destroyed. They took him out and executed him. Asur the Idach, they brought the next son, Omrulei Plach L'Avodah Zarah. Omrulehu, he tells them, no, Kosev HaTorah, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. So Hashem is one, and we're not exchanging him for anybody else. Apkur v'katur, they took him out and killed him. Asur the Idach, they brought the sixth son, Omrulei Plach L'Avodah Zarah. Omrulehu, he answers them, Kosev HaTorah. No, it says in the Torah, Yadaita Ayyum, you should know today, V'ashevoise Elavavecha, and you should keep it carefully in your heart, Ki Hashem Hu HaLikim, that Hashem is the only power, V'ashamayim Mimav Al Ha'aretz Mitochas, and the heaven above on the earth below, Ein Oid, there's no other. Apkur V'katluah, they took him out and executed him. Asur L'Idach, then they brought the seventh son, Omrulei Plach L'Avodah Zarah, and again, they tell him, worship Avodah Zarah. Omrulehu, he answers them, Kosev HaTorah, Es Hashem He'emarta HaYoyim V'Gomer, you have avowed Hashem today, meaning you, Rashi says, He'emarta means Yichadta, you've declared Hashem to be one today, V'Hashem He'emircha HaYoyim, and Hashem has declared you to be one today. Meaning, the boy says, V'Nishvainu LaKodesh Baruch Hu, we have already sworn to Hashem, She'enonim Avirin Oysa B'Keil Acher, that we're not going to exchange him for any other god, V'Afu Nishvalonu, She'en Mavir Son of Uma Acheres, and he also swore to us that he's never going to exchange us for another nation. So he's unwilling to serve the Avodah Zarah either, and here you're going to have that the emperor tries to make him an offer, but before we get to that, so let's talk about why the seven different psukim. So Marsha explains that each of them was being brought before the emperor on a different day of the week. So therefore, each one is saying something that's appropriate for that day of the week. The first day, on Sunday, they're bringing the eldest son. They're telling him, worship Avodah Zarah. He says, no, on the first day of creation, nothing else existed other than Hashem. There were no malachim even. So on Noichi Hashem Alekecha, it was clear that Hashem is the only one, and there exists nothing else. Comes the second one is Brisa, and he was killed. Comes the second one on Monday. On Monday, the Malachim were created. That might cause people to believe that maybe there's Hashem and the Malachim. Maybe there's two different powers. So no, lo yilachay l'kim acherim apone. There's no other gods, no other powers in Hashem's presence. the third day when you have Hashem created the grasses and the flowers and the trees and whatnot, so you could think that maybe it means the earth has some divine power of its own. No, Zaveach Lelekim Yochran. Comes Wednesday when the sun and the moon and then stars were put in the sky, and again a person might think that those are gods. No, Lois Shachal the Kelacher. Then on Thursday you have the birds are created, and you could think that they maybe have they're between heaven and earth, so maybe they have like some kind of intermediate godly power that keeps them going. No, Hashem the King, Hashem Mimav, Allah Earth Mitochas, everything in heaven and in earth and everything between them is all controlled exclusively by Hashem. On the sixth day, you have animals and people were created. So therefore, and we have to know that we can't combine Hashem together with anything else. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is the only one, and there's nothing else that we combine with Hashem. Then comes Shabbos. The seventh boy is being brought on Shabbos. So now, person might think, okay, Hashem created the world in 6 days, and now he's leaving it to run on its own, as many Goyish philosophers then and now claim. So he said, no, as Hashem ha'emarta ayom, we have said that Hashem is the one, that we are constantly loyal to Hashem, and Hashem is always loyal to us, and that's what Shabbos is all about. Because Shabbos is an ois bris, that Hashem not only created the world, but that he continues to run it. So that's why Maharsha says, that's why the seven boys are each of them bringing a different pasuk. Eitz Yosef gives a whole different explanation. He says that the emperor is trying different tactics. Each one he's trying to get one of them. You're not gonna fully do what I want and at least go along with some of it. So he starts off with, first he wants the first one to deny Hashem altogether. No, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Then he tries, okay, so fine, maybe at least you'll believe that Hashem exists, but you'll say that there's more than one of him. So no, he answers, Lo Yelecha Elokim Acherim. He tries the third one, will you at least worship the Shittuf, you'll worship Hashem together with some other power? And he answers that Zeveach Lelekim Yochram. The next one he tries, okay, so bow down to a statue which is not normally worshipped by bowing. And the boy answers him, no, Lois Hishtachva Lekelacher, Hishtachva, bowing is one of those things which a person is chayev, as talks about Masechta Sanhedrin, no matter what kind of Avodah Zarah, whether it's normally worshipped by bowing or not, that's one of the four things that's always usur. Then he tries, okay, are you willing to at least accept that the Avodah Zarah will be a manhig, that he'll be an inferior ruler, as you have, the Eitz Yosef refers over here to the Medrash that forms the beginning of the Maimon B'Yom Ashtei Osei Yom from the Rebbe that talks about the idea where you have the king and his retinue come to town, and one person is saying, I want this duke as my patron, and the other one is saying, I want this prince as my patron, and then the Chacham realizes that I want only the king, and then the Rebbe talks about in the Maimon the whole point of what that represent, the Medrash talks about what that represents as far as us versus the Goyim, and the Rebbe talks about in the Maimon what the deeper meaning of that is, why would a person prefer the duke or the prince or what have you. Anyway, so here also the emperor is offering to this kid that, fine, at least be like one of those other people in the story over there and accept the duke or the prince or the nobleman or whatever as your patron. And he answers him, no, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, there's no shluchim, there's no nothing, it's only Hashem. Then he tries the next one. Okay, you're at least willing to accept that the Avodah Zarah should be an intermediary between you and Hashem. Like you have to go through it to reach Hashem. No, Hashem Elokim B'Shamayim Ma'aval Aretz Mitochas Einoid. We don't need any intermediaries. So then he comes to the last one. He says like this, you know, you're in Golus now, and you have the argument that the Gemara brings in Sanhedrin, we'll have it in a couple of days in Daf Yomi, where people argued in Yechezkel's times that, listen, you know, if a husband and wife get divorced, or if a master sells his slave, then the husband has no further claim on his wife, and the master has no further claim on his ex-slave. So the same way, in other words, they were arguing in Yechezkel's times, if Hashem has sent us into Golus, then it means that Hashem has given up on us and we can do whatever we want. So now this emperor is trying the same thing with this kid. And the kid is answering that, no, Hashem did not sell us. We and Hashem have sworn that we're forever loyal to one another, and neither one of us is giving the other one up. So now the story continues. Amalek Kaser. So now the emperor says to the youngest boy, I'll make you a deal. Ishti loch gushpanka, I'll throw my signet ring down on the ground, the gochin v'shakle, and you bend down and pick it up. Ki hechi delemu, this way people will say, kabla lehurman de malka. This way people will at least it'll appear to people as though you accepted the king's order and you bowed down. So in other words, you and I will both know that you're not actually bowing to Avodah Zarah, but at least you'll put on a show in front of everybody. Omalei, so the boy answers him, Chaval alacha keser, chaval alacha keser. Woe to you, keser, woe to you, keser. Chaval, actually, Eitz Yosef says, and not just woe, it's a lashon klala. You're so concerned for your own covered, our covered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Alachas Kama V'Kama, how much more so we should be concerned for the covered of Hashem and not even do something that would be the appearance of Avodah Zarah. Marsha says, again, if you look at that Kapitel Mem Dalad that the Gemara had quoted, the Pasuk Ki Alecha Ragnu Kol Hayom, you find other psukim in that Kapitel that reflect this whole dialogue, this whole argument between them that you have over there, many psukim over there, Mikil Mechorer from a Gadif, because of the voice of the one who blasphemes and reviles Hashem as this case there, calls us Ba'asnu V'Lesh Chachnucha, all of this has happened, but we haven't forgotten you, V'Lesh Shikanu V'Visecha, we haven't been disloyal to your covenant, and we go on and like that, and we go on and we say over there, won't Hashem look into this and investigate this, he knows what's hidden in the heart, meaning in other words exactly this, like Hashem will know that this boy is not, if he does bend down and pick up the ring, that he's not doing it to worship Avodah Zarah, he's just doing it in order to make the case to look good. And nevertheless, we're saying we're not going to do anything, we're not going to do anything with that. We're not even, we know that even just to worship Avodah Zarah in a pretense is a serious enough thing. We find, the Gemara in Megillah tells us it's one of the reasons for Haman's Gzeira is because they bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, even though they didn't truly believe in it, but they were only doing it out of fear of the king. Nevertheless, therefore, Hashem gave them the whole scare with Haman. So now this boy says to this king, we're not making that same mistake again. Hashem investigates this and Hashem will punish the people even who worship Avodah Zarah, even if they're only pretending. Because after all, nobody else knows what's hidden in the heart. Other people are going to think it's going to make a chilul Hashem. They're going to think that I worshiped Avodah Zarah. And now when the pasuk continues, Ki Alecha Hiragnu Kol Hayom, Marsha said, since he had explained that each of these boys was brought in front of the king on a different day of the week, so it's literally Kol Hayom, every day of the week, one of them went on Mesiras Nefesh. So the Gemara continues, Apkulam Mikdale, they took this boy out to kill him. Omruluhu Ime, the mother says, Yahavua Niali, give him to me first. The Enshake Purta, let me kiss him a little bit. The Medrash, when it tells the story, adds also a detail. The boy was very, very young. The Medrash says that when this youngest boy, who just had this whole dialogue with the king, and the Medrash even gives more details of the dialogue, the Medrash says he was two years, 6 months, and 6.5 hours old. You know, imagine the kind of treasures that the Goyim have robbed us of over the centuries like that. The Medrash adds the detail that she actually nursed him one last time also. Why she wanted to kiss him one last time, there's a number of interesting reasons given for it. One very interesting one brought from the Sefer Divrei Shol, she wanted to demonstrate with that it's not, when she's going to see him go to his death, you might think, look, maybe she doesn't care for him anymore. Maybe she's gone crazy after seeing six of her kids killed, and therefore, like, she's lost any of her maternal instincts, and therefore, like, it's not such a big thing for her. No, she's showing, I still love him very much, and I still am kissing him and nursing him and whatever, and still I understand that Mesiras Nefesh is more important than that. Omrali. So she says to him, Bonai, my children, Lachu v'imru l'Avram avichem, go tell your father Avram, Atar akadta mizbeach echod, you tied one son on one mizbeach, v'ani akadti shiva mizbechos, I've bound seven children on mizbechos. So, in other words, in a certain sense, she's saying, like, my Mesiras Nefesh is seven times greater than Avram's. Although there is an explanation about that actually what she's saying is the fact that I had the ability to do that is only because Avraham, you opened up the sinner of Mesiras Nefesh, and therefore you made it possible for people to do that in future generations. And Gemara continues, Afi also lagag v'naflo mesa. She also then went up to the roof and fell down and died. Now, what does that mean? Some Mephoshim explain that it means that she committed suicide. And again, the question becomes, like with the 400 boys and girls before, how could she do that? And again, there's a number of explanations among them, again, that she's concerned that they might torture her and force her to worship Avodah Zarah. Unlike the kids, they're not just going to go and execute her. They might first force her to, or to do other averus. There's also the possibility the Medrash says that she went crazy after all of this. In that case, obviously, you can't hold her responsible for anything she did. And the Maharal says that it doesn't mean necessarily literally that she went up to a roof. It means after all this, she felt she can't go on living. She pleaded with Hashem, right now I'm alive, which is compared to like being on a roof, being on a high, being high up. I can't go on with life anymore. Please take my life and let me go down, like a person goes down into the grave, and Hashem accepted her tefillah. So this is it's famously told in connection with Hanukkah, because Yosefun tells it as a story that happened in front of Antiochus. Here the Gemara is telling it as a story that happened sometime after the Churban. So again, it may have happened. There may have been two such cases. There may have been two such stories in Jewish history, or it might be that it happened once. And the Gemara says case over here. Maybe it means more generally a king. Yotza Baskol Omra, Baskol announced and said, Ema Bonim Smecha, the mother of the children is happy. That after all, she can be happy in the Olam Emes, that she was willing to see all her children killed like that, or Kiddush Hashem, and then have that happen. In fact, Eitz Yosef says, you know, the difference is, Avraham did it willingly. Here it's not exactly, it was exactly willingly. They were all brought in front of the emperor. But first of all, she was telling them, go be Moisen Nefesh. She gave them such a chinuch, and now also she's encouraging each one to be brave and be Moisen Nefesh. And she's saying that, you know what, even if it was up to me, I would have rather that even if I was given the choice, she's saying, I would have had them killed rather than worship Avodah Zarah, or even pretend to worship Avodah Zarah. The Gemara continues, when we're talking about this pasuk, ki alecha hiragnu kol hayom. So the Gemara brings other explanations of what it refers to. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi omar zu mila shenitnu bashmini. This refers to mila, which takes place on the eighth day. Now, sometimes a mila can sometimes be hazardous for the baby. You have even cases of mesu machmas mila rachman otzlan. But when people give a bris mila for their child, then they're doing in a small way. They're doing a mesiras nefesh, like these great stories of mesiras nefesh that we just said. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rabbi Shimon and Lachish Omar, Elu Tamar Chachamim Shemarin Hilchus Shechita Ba'atzman. The Pasuk Ki Alecha Hiragnu Kol Hayom is referring to Tamar Chachamim who demonstrate the halachas of Shechita on themselves. You have to demonstrate when you're teaching Shechita how the knife is supposed to be held and what part of the throat is supposed to be cut. And now the problem is, Omar Rava, as in fact Rava says, Kol Mili Lechzi Inish Benafshe, a person can demonstrate any mitzvah, any halacha on his own body, Bar Mishchita V'Dover Acha, with the exception of Shchita and Dover Acha, meaning Tsaras. So Rashi says, in the case of Shchita, it would be because he uses a knife, he might hold it the wrong way and end up cutting himself in the throat. And as far as Tsaras, Rashi says, is because it's dangerous, it may actually cause him to develop Tsaras. Marsha says it's more the point. It's more because al tishach pel satan. It causes that even if he's not using a knife, even if he's just using his finger like this, it's still al tishach pel satan that he may be in danger of that kind of thing. The pasuk ki alecha hiragnu kol hayom is referring to Tamar Chachamim who kill themselves over Divrei Torah, meaning that they make do with very little, and they give up a lot of their possible comforts for the sake of Torah. Kidur of Shem and Lakish, as Rish Lakish said, Amar Rish Lakish, Ein Divrei Torah miskaimen elav misha memes atzmei aleha. Divrei Torah lasts only by a person who kills himself over it, who's willing to give up all of his creature comforts and everything, like we have in Pirkei Avos, pas melach toichel and all that. This is the Torah, when a person dies in a tent, which hints at the point, in other words, when does a person really have Torah? When he's willing, when he's ready to die in the tents of Torah. To take away any of his taivus of his goof and so on and so forth. There's also actually a vote from the Ksav Sofer, and also that when the person realizes that the world in general is only like an oil, only a temporary tent, then he really has the mentality that he needs to be able to learn and absorb Torah. The Maharal makes a point in it, by the way, here and in other places. Torah is ruchnius. A person's body is gashmius. So therefore, the two of them can't coexist, and therefore you need to have the memes atzmei aleha in order to really be able to absorb Torah. So all these things, the Gemara is saying, all of these are part of the Ki Olecha Hiragnu Kol Hayom. In other words, one point we can get from this Gemara is, you know, we have these great stories in the Siddur Nefesh that we just did, that we just talked about, that people continue to talk about for thousands of years. Meanwhile, you have, let's say, a person goes and makes a bris milah for his son, and everybody thinks, big deal, you know, everybody makes a bris milah for their son, and everybody goes and learns Torah, but you have to realize that they're each in their own way is doing something as heroic as Chana B'Shiva Spaner, as this Isha B'Shiva Spaner, or as those 400 children. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Aleph Nissen being Rosh Chodesh, so we have, the Alter Rebbe mentions that every day we say the Nasi. So Yesh Lema, the Rebbe says this minhag of reading the Nasiim in Nissen has to really do with the whole concept of Geula and Chodesh Nissen. Chodesh Nissen is the Chodesh of Geula, as the Gemara says, V'Nissen Nigalu, V'Nissen Asidin Ligol, and the very name Nissen is Meloshen Nes. So therefore, we read about the Nesiim with the Korbanos that they brought for the Chanukas HaMishkan, because that is the most suitable time for the Geula HaMitzvah Shleima. And when there's the Geula HaMitzvah Shleima, there will be the Chanukas Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, because after all, the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be the ultimate completion of the Mishkan and the Mikdash, and there will be Korbanos Miluim, there will be Korbanos Chanukas HaBayis then as well. So therefore, so when we say the Nasi is a preparation for that kind of thing. Continuing with Eruv Tchumen, So we talked about the dinim of the tchum and the dinim of eruv tchumin. So now, how do you make an eruv tchumin? You take enough bread that'll serve for two meals, which is defined as six kibetza, or you take some kind of relish, some kind of side dish or whatever that is commonly eaten with bread, and that there's enough of it that you would eat with a meal of two sudas of bread. So the only things that you can't use for that purpose are water and salt. You go to the place where you want to put it, you make the bracha, and you say, you make the declaration that it says in the Siddur, with this Eruv I'll be able to go 2,000 amos in every direction, and then that's it, your Eruv is made, and now on Shabbos, as long as we talked about last time, the Eruv is within 2,000 amos of your house, or your city, then you're able to walk to it on Shabbos, and then you're able to walk from it your other 2,000 amos. The Eruv will last, you put it down for one Shabbos, it'll last for as many Shabbosim as you want, as long as it stays intact. So say, for example, back in the day, for example, when I was in Gan Yisrael, New York, I sometimes made an Eruv Tchumen for myself to go to Parksville using a jar of pickles. That'll keep for quite some time. You just have to put it someplace where it'll still be there the following week, and then you're good. It will last for many Shabbosim.